Under One Roof, Under One Law. That's the title of a campaign launched this week by Caritas Internationalis, calling for equal rights for migrant domestic workers. Entrusted to look after our houses, our children or our elderly relatives, this largely invisible army of cleaners, carers, au pairs and maids includes many women who are underpaid, overworked, even abused or abandoned with no respect for their human rights and no legislation to protect them. In Asia alone, millions of women and sometimes young girls work in private households, accounting for around one-third of all female employment across the continent.
We have seen all sorts of physical violence. We have seen women burned with an iron. We have seen women who were raped. So there is the whole range of physical abuse there.
Martina Leach is International Policy Director for Caritas, the global confederation of over 160 national Catholic aid and development agencies in countries around the world. She told me more about the campaign to bring legal rights, better protection, and above all, a culture of greater respect for migrant domestic workers.
The campaign is, first of all, hoping to encourage our member organizations, 164 all around the world, to do some advocacy work before the International Labour Conference happening in June in Geneva, which will draft a convention concerning domestic workers. What we are doing, we are putting the focus on migrant domestic workers because a large proportion of domestic workers are migrant domestic workers. And if we say migrant, we are talking both about internal and transnational migrants. I think the second part of the campaign or the second issue is around the sensitization of a broader public around this issue. I always say migrant domestic workers are very close to our life. They live in our homes. They deal with our children. They care about elderly. And yet, in many countries, people seem to forget that they are human beings. And so they suffer abuse, they suffer exploitation. So there is often no legislation protecting them from this. I think there are only 19 countries in the world who have legislation around domestic work. In many countries, the work is not even recognized as a regular work. So it leaves the scope for all sorts of exploitation and about very sad stories.
Can you tell us some of these stories, some of the worst case scenarios that you've seen that illustrate really what is going on?
Yeah. Well, for example, a story I heard about the US where a domestic worker was hidden 19 years in the house of the employee and nobody ever saw this person. So whenever somebody came in, the person was hidden. And eventually one day some people suspected that there must be somebody there. And so she got freed. Other stories are, for example, during the war in Lebanon, where you have a high number of domestic workers, often people fleeing the war just left their domestic workers in their houses, locking the houses and leaving them maybe with a dog and some food for the dog, but not for the domestic worker, leaving them there. So our colleagues in Lebanon did a very great job to free these peoples because they were aware of the fact that these people were working in these houses, or also through, how do you say, hotlines, people were informed that somebody is there.
What is the best way to raise awareness, first of all, with the workers themselves that they do have rights, even if they are in these rather vulnerable situations, as you say, with little legislation to protect them?
Well, some good examples we have seen, for example, in Sri Lanka, where our colleagues do pre-departure counseling. So if women want to go abroad for this type of work, they are trained beforehand, or let's say informed beforehand, what their rights would be. And I think more importantly, to also give them a reference point. Very often this is Caritas, but it might also be another specialized organization where they can then refer to in case they suffer these kind of abuses and exploitation. This, of course, means that people do need to have access at least to a telephone line, an email, whatever, which in some cases is quite difficult because people are often locked up, they don't have papers. And since many employers belong to the so-called elite in the countries, of course, people are often not believed. So I think what you also need in the countries of destination is really specialized organizations who are aware of the issue and kind of do outreach to sensitization campaigns. So, for example, coming back to our colleagues in Lebanon, they showed a film in the public TV making the case of domestic workers and thus raising the awareness among people.
Although there must be some opposition to that, I imagine, as you say, from the ruling classes, the kind of people who will be perhaps committing this kind of abuse.
For sure, that exists. And I know that some colleagues who are involved in that work have faced some threats or some, let's say, bad words around why they are engaging in this kind of work. But that comes back to the perception of domestic workers. So people often treat them as commodities and not as real human beings. So that's probably, and that's the first part of our campaign, that we say these people have to be treated with respect. They are under the same roof very often because there are a lot of live-in domestic workers, but yet they are not treated or they are not accepted with the same, let's say, fundamental rights.
Of course, many of these migrant workers will perhaps have contact with churches in their destination countries, and therefore working through a network like the church is a very good starting point, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So when I speak about Caritas, it's for sure that we do not work alone. And I should bring in the issue of trafficking in here as well, as many domestic workers are trafficked, meaning not trafficked for sexual exploitation, but for labor exploitation. And in that area, we work a lot together with religious congregations who often have the facilities to provide shelter, who often come across these domestic workers in church, because that's where often women...
The one place, like, yes, where they are allowed out.
Exactly, where they go and they might find an open ear for their issues. But I wanted to come back as well to the previous question when you said, well, what's the best thing to do? I think the other issue, and that's the name of the campaign, of course, is that you do advocacy and lobbying work at your national government, because these are the people who will, at the end of the day, decide if there will be a convention on the rights of domestic workers. And so you need a whole sensitization around governmental officials to say, yes, these are people with rights and they should be entitled to have at least a kind of fundamental protection. And we have seen examples, and again, the example in India, for example, where colleagues of ours, together with other alliances, have advocated for minimum wages for domestic workers, because in some countries there is no limit for what people can earn. And they have achieved that at least domestic workers now are entitled to a minimum wage. Or in countries like in Lebanon, they were successful to draft a model contract for domestic workers so that at least there is a joint standard where you say, well, that's the basis for an employer-employee relationship. And a very nice thing, which was quite unusual, is that for the first time in Lebanon, they also managed to convict an employer for the exploitation done to a woman, and she got compensation. That was the first time ever it happened in Lebanon.
The majority of these migrant workers employed in this way will be women, won't they? Or are there cases of men as well?
There are cases of men, but they are, let's say, less than women. So the great majority of domestic workers involved in caring, in domestic services in the houses are women.
And are they mainly women who have come out of necessity, unable to find jobs and support their families back home, or are they there out of choice?
I think most of them come there out of necessity. For example, that men have lost their jobs, so who can take care of the family, or if they are qualified. I remember talking to a priest in the Philippines who says, yes, we have qualified women, but they often do not find jobs in our country, so they have to go. There might be as well women who go out of choice, certainly, but I think, and that comes back as well to the trafficking issue, many people say, well, if they went out of choice, then it's their problem if they face these difficulties. But I think many people do not imagine what kind of abuse and exploitation they are facing. Also because at the beginning of the journey, often they get a contract in their country of origin. And as soon as they arrive in the country of destination, they get another contract, often in a language they even don't understand. And their passports are taken away. And another big issue in many countries is that their work permit or their residence permit is tied to one employer. So as soon as they complain, they are kind of, they are no legal subject.
Illegal.
Yeah, they become illegal. And that leads as well to detention in some cases.
You're talking about the need for a convention, and yet if so much of this goes on behind the walls of the house, so much is hidden, how much difference will a convention make? How difficult will it be to monitor compliance with this?
Well, I think one part of the answer is certainly that the way will make a change, the way towards a convention, because now you will have a substantial number of state parties to the ILO, the International Labour Organization, kind of having or focusing their attention on that issue. So I think that will create another form of awareness. Secondly, for sure, the negotiations will take some time. So people are saying that it's not likely that this convention will be adopted at this conference, but it might be next year or the year after. And then it will very much depend what kind of monitoring mechanisms are attached to that convention. In some cases, in some other conventions, you have regular reporting mechanisms. So where the states have to report on their compliance with the convention. And that for sure is, of course, an important aspect. There are discussions around, I don't know if that will then at the end materialize in such a convention, that you could allow labor inspections as well in private households. But that, of course, is a very tricky issue, I would say.
You're talking about most of these employees being women, and as well as being treated badly, being kept in slave-like conditions, there's often cases of physical abuse, sexual abuse, isn't there? I mean, I imagine you have some dramatic stories here too.
Yeah, I mean, you see, and it comes back to the issue of respect and the way how domestic workers are perceived in many countries. So they are commodities, they have to obey the employer, and if they don't do things right, as the employer imagines them to do, then they can face, we have seen all sorts of physical violence. We have seen women burned with an iron. We have seen women who were raped in the households. So there is the whole range of physical abuse there. But we also have to say that, I mean, that's, let's say, the dramatic part of it. There are also possibly less dramatic stories. So I have met a lady from Africa who came to Italy to complete her studies in Italy, and she was looking for a place where to stay. And she ended up in a family. And she said, well, the family offered me a roof and something to eat, but they never thought about paying me. And I was, since the link in the family or in the household is so close, you living in that household, she said, well, sometimes I didn't even dare to ask anything because I was so happy that I could stay in that household. Although now reflecting after some years about what has happened to me, some things were probably not correct either.
So there are many different situations, and it's looking for some kind of overall legislation, some overall guidelines that will help people in many different situations in many different countries.
Yes. What I have to clarify, so the ILO is doing a convention for domestic workers in general, independently if they're migrants or non-migrants. But we, as I said before, we have seen that the biggest part of these domestic workers are migrants. And we now would like to see, and that's why we are asking for a convention, but we would also like to see some specific articles, requests in that convention, which cover the issue of migrant domestic workers, which have some specific issues, like, for example, their work permit not being tied to one employer, which is a very specific case to migrant domestic workers. The other issue is that they should be entitled to family life. Many of them who have to live in the family of the employer have no right to be together with their family very often. Some of them, in some countries we have seen, they cannot marry another person. So as soon as they marry another person, they are expelled from the country. If they are pregnant, they can be just put on the street because there is no provision. So they are really depending very, very much on the employer. And that's what we would like to be tackled in such a convention.
I imagine they must, in many cases, when these are workers who come from developing countries, for example, face problems of racism also in the countries where they are staying.
Yes, that's true. And, well, it's clear what we have been seeing in many countries in Europe specifically. You see a lot of racism around people from third countries, so to speak. So that for sure exists. And that makes it even more difficult for them to complain and to be believed. What we are also asking is that as a minimum in the countries, there is a kind of figure called an ombudsman for the issues of domestic workers. And the most important part of that would be that this ombudsman is somebody who is not forced to report to the authorities about the complaints of the domestic worker, because often they are irregular in the country. They are not regular in the country, so that at least people get justice, they have an open ear, and in the best of the cases, they might get as well some compensation for the injustice they faced.
My thanks there to Martina Leitch, International Policy Director for Caritas Internationales. And if you want to find out more about their campaign, you can find them on the web at www.caritas.org.